Moolala is brought to you by the nonprofit credit counseling agency Credit Canada and by Home Equity Bank, provider of the CHIP reverse mortgage. Financial wellness, financial well-being, whatever phrase you use, it does not look the same for everyone, depending on income levels and job status, mental health, trauma, gender, education level, culture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All of these factors come into play in terms of how financial wellness is defined and how it is attained. Today, we're going to focus on Indigenous peoples, the opportunities and some of the real hurdles that they face. Simon Bracoupé is the Senior Vice President of Education, Communication, and Services for the First Nations Education Administrators Association. He joins us now to talk about some of the factors that determine or affect financial wellness in First Nations communities. Hello there.
Hello, Kwekwe.
Kwekwe, we spoke a couple of years ago on this topic, and here we are again. Where have you seen progress, and where have efforts stalled, in your view?
There are many more organizations, nonprofits, involved in First Nations financial wellness. You know, I think the work that AFOA did with Prosper Canada increased people's awareness of what are the policy issues facing Indigenous people broadly. You know, I think there's still a, I'd say maybe 10% of the work's done. You know, 90% of the work has to be done. You know, I think resources is one of them. I know organizations like AFOA Canada, CPA Canada, and Prosper Canada are all in need of more resourcing to reach out to communities and develop those relationships over the long term. That's really what's needed.
Your new-ish role, not that new, but new-ish, is with, as I said, the First Nations Education Administrators Association. What role does education play when it comes to financial wellness?
It plays a big role. You know, I did some research 2013 with AFOA, and what we found was that in countries like New Zealand, Maori were linking education with their land claims. So what they were doing was they were teaching kids in school financial planning, budgeting, that type of thing. But at the same time, they were receiving monies from their nations into a bank account. So I think when you're playing with play money, it's not as serious when you're playing with real money. And I think the real money in children's bank account make them think about the future in terms of, am I going to go to university or college? Am I going to build a house? Am I going to retire? So I think early on, education plays a very big role.
It's a really interesting idea. And for some nations, there has been a significant change in their financial fortunes for a bunch of reasons. It could be, you know, real estate development or economic opportunity in their region. And for others, there has been nothing that has moved the needle for generations. Can you talk a bit about the differences amongst nations, amongst geographies, urban, rural, treaties signed, unsigned? What are some of the similarities and what are some of the differences?
So, you know, I think we all know that in Canada, Indigenous people have lower income, lower education, all that. You know, I think we really need to focus on young folks. There was a researcher in Montreal that talked about the demographic dividend. So we have a lot of young people. Why don't we invest in their education, their future, their employment? Because that could make a big difference from the, I think they estimated the gross domestic product for Indigenous people is under $30 billion a year, but it could be $100 billion a year. So education plays a big role. You know, I think all Canadians have a role to play in that. School boards, I think half the high school students, First Nations high school students, for example, go off their reserve or off their First Nation to go to school. So we all have a role in this. Mm.
What role do the financial institutions play, and where are they doing it well? Because there is certainly a history for Indigenous people as it relates to institutions of all kinds, but in this case, financial institutions, that has seeded a mistrust that someone who grew up, you know, white middle class in the suburbs just doesn't have that same context for the institutions.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head with trust. You know, I think there's a lot of distrust in Indigenous communities of institutions that they're not their institutions, like banks, for example. Some banks like Bank of Montreal, located Bank on Reserve at Six Nations. So that's signaling to the community that that bank has an investment in that community. I think in Ontario, I'm not sure of the latest numbers, but I think there's like 16 banks on reserve. So banks, credit unions, all have to develop a better relationship with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis communities. And that's really the beginning under reconciliation, for example. I think a year or so ago, there was a bank where a grandfather had gone in and was turned away. And actually, the grandfather was opening an account for his granddaughter. And it ended badly, despite the bank having trained staff in cultural safety. So I think, to me, people are putting the effort in, but I think we need more effort and over a longer period of time. It's not a 5 or 10 year process.
What would you say about the concept of retirement for Indigenous people? Because there's so many interesting factors. First among them, how revered or respected elders are in communities, in Indigenous communities, in a way that they aren't in many other communities, and the sort of notion that, you know, you're living on the land in a way that someone who worked at a bank is like, get me out of here. I got to be done by 55. Yeah. So give me some context on how you think about it differently and what that means in terms of the education and planning and all that.
Well, I think, one is, I retired a few years ago, but I didn't retire.
You're here talking to me.
Yeah, and a lot of my friends are in the same boat. I just met a friend. We were getting our booster shot on Sunday, and I asked him, "Have you retired?" He goes, "No." So we both agreed we're not going to retire. You know, we're just going to keep doing the things that we do in our communities. But a lot of Indigenous people can't retire simply because they don't have the funds to retire. They don't have enough money, and I think about half of the population are not in a position to retire. That being said, I think Canada's done a good job, as you know, with seniors, that they're providing resources for seniors so that they're not below the below the poverty line. Mm-hmm. So I think you've got that balance, but I think AFOA Canada, for example, has a retirement training program, and I delivered some of the courses, and a lot of First Nations are worried about their staff that are about to retire because they don't have an adequate amount of money saved to retire. Mm. So there's a lot of work to be done there.
A lot of work to be done, Simon. I appreciate you joining me to talk about it.
My pleasure.
Simon Brakupe is Senior Vice President of Education, Communication, and Services for the First Nations Education Administrators Association.